Good morning. To each one gathered out this morning, it's good to see each one of you here. I invite you to worship with us. Bring your greetings this morning in the mighty name of Jesus, the one who heals broken hearts, the one who heals broken lives, the one who heals broken bones, and the one who heals broken eyes. And I say that this morning because I thought I was going to preach in my contacts this morning. And I was so excited about it, I guess I got nervous enough I decided to chicken out. Maybe it was a lack of faith, but every time people have asked me how my injuries have improved, and I feel quite well bodily and physically. I feel like I'm pretty much back to normal. My eyes was always a thing that never was quite back. I still have to shut one eye to shave. Don't plan to grow a beard, but that's just something that I still have to do. But about a week ago, I decided I would try my glasses that I used to wear just to see what it was like. And I never taught school, but I assume that if you had two students in school and one was really fast and one was really slow, it kind of like make it awkward for a while, and after a certain amount of time, maybe the slow student would catch up and it would go smooth for a while, and then they would fall behind again, maybe in the same day. So that's the way my eyes are. So I put the glass on, it took a while, and eventually everything got into shape. And so I was just blessed that I could look down, I could read, and I just saw one, and I looked around and I could read and I could see one. But partway through the day, it was like, well, this isn't working anymore. So it was like there's a short circuit there, and the slow child fell behind again, and the one eye was doing it, and the other one wasn't working with it. So I messed with that about all week, and I'm not sure if it's the brain learning to refunction, or I'm not completely healed, but I might preach in contacts next Sunday. So if I come to, tonight with my contacts in versus these, my children tell me it makes me look 5 years younger, and I'm all in for that. If that helps, I would do that. But I'm just thankful that God heals, and I'm very thankful for that, and I thank you for your prayers, and I'm also mindful by saying that there are some people that God doesn't heal, and I'm not more faithful than everyone else. I don't have more faith than everyone else. It's just the way God works, and we don't understand, we'll never understand, because we don't have the mind of God, why some people he grants healing and some people he takes from this earth, some people live many, many years sickly. But I do believe that when God does heal, that we need to recognize and thank him for it. So for those who have prayed for my healing, thank God that I think my eyesight will come all the way back with a little more time, because 3 months ago they never worked together, and now they do. So I have hope that eventually they will always work together, but we'll see. Well, for a message this morning, I was thinking about, I plan to preach from James chapter 3, 13-18 on wisdom. And before I go there, I was just thinking about the need for wisdom. It doesn't really matter what age. There is a certain age, I guess, that don't really need wisdom. There's a certain age in childhood that I'm going to say, until you're about 15, 18, there's not a lot of wisdom needed in your behalf. The Bible simply tells children to obey your parents. And the parents' wisdom is kind of transferred to the child. And if you obey your parents and you have godly parents, which most of you in this audience, I believe, do, you can obey your parents and trust their wisdom. You don't have to make a lot of wise choices. But somewhere in that age, about 15 to 18, there becomes decisions. And it's interesting. I find it interesting when you look at, when you see young children, and they don't like school and they don't like a lot of things. And it's going to be better when they get big. And I can almost remember being there. And suddenly when they get big, they're suddenly faced with a whole array of options in life. And you suddenly come to the realization that food isn't free. I mean, you just don't sit down at a table and food pops on. So you have to do something to provide for yourself. Your clothing isn't free. You have to, and so suddenly you have to start making decisions. What am I going to do for work? What am I going to do for a job? How am I going to make a living? And that continues on until you get older and you wonder, where should I live? What for house should I buy? And then you have children, and then you get into that age of life that you try to decide how to train children. And I like when I see young parents. We have some in the audience right now that have these children that start to have a personality, and they start to scream. You don't want them to scream. And I remember those days, and it's like, Now what do I do? Hold your mouth shut in church, drag them out, take them to the basement. How do we make this? How do we keep from making a scene in public? And so you have to make these decisions. And along with that, at the same time, you're now making a living and you're making an income. And it was working for a while, but as the family grows and expenses sometimes multiply and income doesn't increase with it, then you have to start trying to decide how you're going to spread this income around. And not only that, you have to somehow in your mind figure out what you're going to do about the offering that's coming up. How are we going to give in the offering? Because, see, that's important too. Because God wants people to give. And so what am I going to not have for myself so I have something to give? And you have to make those decisions. Just decisions everywhere. And as you get older, and I'm not totally here yet, thankfully, but some people, when they get older, they start to lose some steam. And they look at the responsibilities that they carry and what they're doing, and they try to say, how are we going to lay it off? How can we transfer all the work that we've been doing and all the responsibilities we've been carrying for a lot of years? How do we lay that down? How do we pass it on? How do I get rid of some of it and not be so responsible for things that you're no longer physically, maybe mentally able to handle? And maybe it's maybe you have children that are grown and you question, how should I relate to my children? There's some things I see in their lives that I wish they were doing different. How do I relate to them? How do I talk to them about these things without burning bridges? And there's lots. And we can go around and around and try to decide what would be the best way to handle this. And it just takes wisdom. And of course, now we live in a day and age where wisdom is what, a tap away, right? You can Google anything you want to search. Maybe they can even tell you how to raise your children. You can probably find everything there. I actually don't use it very, very little because I'm opposed to the rapid method of information in many ways where it provides, there's that much knowledge available out there. It's amazing how people I talked to a fellow this week that was, he wanted a building, a house, barn dominion, and internet confuses a lot of people like that. You go to see them, they're like, well, we read all this stuff online, we don't even want to believe it so much. Well, no, you're going to get confused. If you take all the information out there and try to compile it, it's going to confuse you likely, just the way it is. And then not only do we have decisions to make for ourselves in life, we also have decisions that maybe we make as groups. We make decisions in regards to other people. And we have that in, well, Bible Discovery. So, you know, the Bible Discovery Committee sat together whenever it started, 2-3 years ago, and we kind of came up with a list of guidelines. We'd like to see that these town children come to our Bible Discovery. There's some things that we agreed we'd like to have them clothed modestly. A certain amount of their bodies we would like to have covered. So that's easy to write. You know, it's just not hard to sit down as men and say, this is what needs to happen, okay? And so you have Bible Discovery and you have children coming from wrecked homes. I don't know how to say it. It's just situations that the children are, you wonder if, a couple things. You wonder if they're wanted, if anybody even cares about them, if anybody cares for them, or who they even actually really belong to. And if they know who they belong to. It's a confusing world. And then these children come and they don't fit the guideline book. They don't fit the guideline that we kind of hoped that they would have, as far as, you know, being dressed from the shoulders to the knees. And what do you do about it? When do you say, you know, we kind of have this thing? And then it doesn't stop with the town children. I mean, we have, I'm part of numerous committees. So, the course committee. So how many times can somebody skip course and then they can stay at this course practice and still be a part? And somebody has to decide whether what we wrote is going to be what we stick to, how we're going to address it, what you're going to do about it. I mean, it's just life, you could I could stand up for the rest of the morning and probably think of situations that we have to, I mean, what do you do with a people that are part of a church, and we agree this is something we're going to do, to be members of a certain congregation, and it's not quite what's happening. When you say something, when you let it ride, when you hope it, life's full of these things. And it just, it's like, Lord, we just need wisdom. It takes wisdom to know how to decipher, how to make good judgment calls. So this morning, I would like to turn, and I'd like just to read James chapter 3. I'm going to open my Bible. I just got some, not as organized as what sometimes I like to be, but we're going to trust the Lord with that. One reason I didn't wear my contacts, didn't want to unorganize anything more than what it already was. James chapter 3, verse 13. We have right here James writing, and he says this: Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envy and strife in your heart, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in them, in peace, is sown in peace of them that make peace. Who is a wise man? And I assume that the world, we would look around us and we could probably do a Google search on the wise men that's in the world, and it'd probably give you some. I do think that Solomon would come up. I know that he was considered a very wise man, so we probably would get Solomon in there somewhere. But who is a wise man? And that's what James writes, who's a wise man. Then we have him listing out two types of wisdom. He says there's two wisdoms here. We have the one, it says, is earthly. It descended not from above. And then we have another one in verse 17 that says it descended from above. So I'm going to use a whiteboard this morning, and we're just going to list it at that. Two wisdoms. And over here, we're going to put from beneath. Not from above, it's from beneath.
No desde arriba, es desde abajo.
From below, from beneath, and we're going to say it's worldly. Put it over here, it's from the world. Now on this side, we're going to have from above, and we're going to have spiritual. So James spells out here that we have two types of wisdom. And he just lists them out. He says in verse 15, that this wisdom descendeth not from above. This earthly wisdom descendeth not from above. We're going to say it's earthly. I'm sorry, we still got the wrong paper here. Well, that's better yet. I think I brought the wrong paper. Nah, here we go. Too many papers. All right. It's earthly. It's number one, it's earthly. And when you think of earthly wisdom, I simply have it labeled it as this. And I'm not going to write all the letters down, because there's numerous things that we think of earthly. We just think of things that has to do with this earth. So letter A, you could put worldly. I already have that up above. But it's worldly. I don't have it spelled right either. So we have, it's worldly, so we have a whole wisdom system out there, things that you can go for answers to answer these questions we talked about, that is based on the here and now. You can make a decision based on what's right here, right now, and think about how it would affect you now and what it'll do for you. And then we have a second thing I would have, and that is it doesn't acknowledge God. So we could put no knowledge of God. This is earthly wisdom. People that have a lot of answers. Decisions from that perspective is that I am my own God attitude. If I want to do it, I'll do it. And if I don't want to do it, I don't do it. It's just whatever I want to do. That's how I make my decisions. If I feel like something needs done, I'll do it. And if I don't feel like it's necessary, I ain't going to bother doing it. That's another attitude of this kind of wisdom. And then there's also the third thing here, and that is the don't care attitude. And we don't care about how others feel. We don't care about how others, what others think. And this is the reason we live in a world where there's lying and cheating and stealing and all that stuff that happens because people make decisions on what feels good to them. And they say they'll never stop and take time to think how their decisions will affect someone else, the person they're stealing from, the person they're taking from, the person they're lying to, and the person that's counting on them. And they don't bother thinking about what that'll do to other people. They're only thinking about themselves. This is earthly wisdom. The second thing that James says, he said it is, this is actually letter A or B, sorry, still got it confused, but it's all right. The second thing that I have that James writes down here, that it is natural. This wisdom that is from the world is natural, from below is natural. It's something we're born with. It really takes no effort, not that much effort to get that kind of wisdom. It's just every man's born with it. And Travis read the verse in Romans. I think he read Romans 5, verse 12. Maybe he didn't get that far. But it says about how by through Adam, sin was passed. Well, let me just read it so I get it right. Romans 5, verse 12. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. So, because of our natural born, we're born in the natural man, that this is what we're born with. We're born with just simply worldly wisdom. And we can engulf ourselves, and you can spend your lifetime chasing wisdom and chasing knowledge, and you will gain knowledge and wisdom, but you'll only gain it from this perspective. You'll never get it. You never get it from this perspective. You're born with this. It's natural. Outside of Jesus Christ, if you're never born again, that's the only wisdom you ever have. So remember, any wisdom that comes from any outside source, if it's not coming from a regenerate individual, the only wisdom they have will be this kind of wisdom. It'll never be this. And the third thing James says, and that is, it is devilish. Again, he's labeling this kind of wisdom as devilish. And I don't know what you think of when you think of devilish. I'm sure you think of devil. That's what it comes from. It comes from the spirit of untruth, spirit of lies. And that's what we're in this world, and that's what is opposing the other kind of wisdom. It's that kind of wisdom right there. Ephesians 6, verse 12 says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness of this world, against the spiritual wickedness in high places. This is that's what's over here. It's just devilish, it's wickedness. Wisdom of the world. Proceeds from the devil. So this morning, this is your one option for wisdom, and you can chase that your entire life, and you will get what this kind of wisdom has to offer you. Remember where it's coming from. And James has the other kind of wisdom. It's the wisdom that I like to talk about. He talks about the wisdom that is from above. It says it's first is pure. And you can think about how these are so much different than that. It's one reason I listed them out, so you can see the difference in them in the Bible. You just read them in the verses. But it's pure, and when we think of something pure, You think of, well, that new little baby here this morning, pure, innocent, right? It's just clean, it's fresh, it's real, it's right. There's no blemish. Pure. Spiritual, and this kind of wisdom is always pure. Undefiled. Without ulterior motives. The decisions you make from this perspective won't have an ulterior motive. It'll simply be what it is because it needs to be. And he said, that's first of all. And then after that, he says it needs to be gentle. It needs to be gentle, and we can all identify with what we know what gentleness is. Gentleness is, well, you take that little baby and you hold that little baby and you're gentle. You aren't rough and tough, you're gentle. Well, that's what the wisdom decisions we make for ourselves, decisions we make for other people, this probably has more to do with the decisions we make concerning Bible discovery or whatever other thing you're trying to figure out how to deal with people with and you try to think how to do that. Well, from this perspective, you just do what you feel like doing. Don't really, you do it because you have to or whatever. This perspective, you said you're going to be gentle. I care about that person. You're mild, you're moderate, you're patient. You think about gentleness. That's what gentleness is. And that was actually number three. So now we get number, this one under number three. We'll put peaceable. The wisdom that is from above also wants to bring peace. Doesn't matter which situation you find yourself in. Your goal is to make decisions, make wise decisions that would bring peace to the situation in some way. And I know whenever we're dealing with evil, we can't make peace with evil people. But this, I would suggest, is more inside of making dealing with situations inside of a brotherhood. And that is, if you have to, how are you going to reach people and try to help people? You're going to have a peaceful attitude. Considerate of others. Then we have the fourth thing, is easy to be entreated. Easy to be entreated. We all like when we go to someone and we can talk to them, and they're willing to sit down and really hear what we have to tell them rather than listening with one ear, and you know they don't could care less, but they're willing to sit down and listen to your perspective. This kind of wisdom that's from above will do that for people. Even though we think we know where we stand, and we I believe in standing on truth, you will still listen when people have something to give you, or it's something they want to tell you. Listen, you're easy to be spoken to. Shows a submissive attitude, an humble attitude. People that are not humble and not submissive, they don't want to hear anybody else. They have their own agenda. They're only thinking about themselves, and they ain't even interested in hearing if you have a different perspective. And then the fifth thing I have here, James writes, and that is, it's somebody that is, you'll be full of mercy. And I like this word. Because when something is full, it's full, you see? I mean, you can take a cup of water, and this cup is not full, you see? Is the cup full? And maybe you would say it is because it has water in it, but in reality, it's not full. A cup is not full until it's clear up where you can't put anything else in it. And James writes that if we're going to have the true wisdom, and that is that we will be full of mercy. We'll be so full of mercy that that's the only thing we have to give when we deal with people and we make decisions, that we're merciful. We're full of it. Merciful. Compassionate of others. Shows kindness to others. Desire to help others. This is merciful. Full of mercy. And then the sixth thing is full of good fruit. Now let's not get. I know we're in the fruit time of the year, but let's not get confused with apples and peaches and pears, because the Bible, when it talks about fruit, it talks about deeds and works and acts. Okay, and Jesus says in Matthew 7. Verses 15 to 20, there's going to be false teachers, there's going to be false preachers, a lot of false things are going to happen. And he says, how are you going to tell? And he says, the way you're going to tell that is by their fruits. Now, it's not talking about what kind of apples they're growing. He's saying what kind of life they're living. You're going to look at people and look at the way they're acting, look at the way they live, and you're going to say, it's good, because good trees bring good fruit. And again, it's full of it. It's not like half the time it is and half the time it isn't. It says people that are filled with this kind of wisdom from above are full of it. Again, I could look at a cup. It's not quite full, but if it was clear full, there's just no room for anything else. That's what their life is. If you fill yourself with wisdom from above, it'll be full of good fruit. And it will also, something it won't have, it says no. James says no. Partiality. Now, that, I like these words because I like full. You think of clear full, and I like no. It doesn't say hardly any. It doesn't say almost none. It says no. No partiality. So that this wisdom that comes from above will also end up with this in it. There'll be no partiality. No favoritism. No decisions made because you favored it, somehow affected your family, and so you favored your you kind of what you normally would have made the decision, you tweaked it a little bit because it felt better for the family. But if it was anybody else's children, it wouldn't have mattered. No partiality. Doesn't matter what color, doesn't matter what race, doesn't matter what family, doesn't matter what size, it doesn't matter what age. It doesn't matter what financial success or unsuccess. This kind of wisdom in making decisions has no partiality. It's simply based on truth. And then the eighth thing he has, again, is a no. Not just hardly any. It's not just maybe a little bit, but it's no. Hypocrisy. No hypocrisy. That means no hypocrisy, and we read about hypocrites, and somebody said they don't like to go to church sometimes because churches are full of hypocrites. And I guess my question is, where else would hypocrites be? I mean, you wouldn't have to be a hypocrite to be anywhere else. You just live your life, right? I mean, I guess that's kind of the way it would seem. So, but he says this kind of wisdom, there's no hypocrisy. It's just sincere. It's real. It's undisguised. It's unfeigned. There's no hypocrisies. There's no under the cover reason for behind the scenes, again, ulterior motive. It's sincere. And then, of course, at the end of these, we have two results. The results of this worldly, wisdom, it says there's bitter envy, there's jealousy, there's pain, there's strife, there's confusion, and evil works. And I believe, I've turned there, doesn't it say every evil work? James chapter 3 again. Yes, it does. Verse 16, where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. So basically, every evil work is falling underneath this category. Every evil work. That is the result of worldly wisdom. You have your earthly, it's natural, and it's devilish, and the end of it is every evil work. That's where worldly wisdom will take you, will bring you out. And the opposite, this, James says, is the results, is the fruit of righteousness, is sown in peace. And I like that thought because the Bible uses many times talking about sowing. You reap what you sow. So if the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace, then what you would reap would be righteousness and peace, right? That's what would come out of a life that is seeking after the wisdom from above. So now this morning you have the option, and that is, what do you choose? What will I choose? What have you chosen thus far, and what will you continue to choose? For just the remainder of the time here, I would like to think about a few things. So this morning we can simply live life the way we want. We can watch society about us, unregenerate man around us. We can take advice from them. Or we can look to God, because that is the giver of wisdom. And Paul writes in Corinthians, and he tells what Isaiah foretold, Isaiah the prophet said was going to happen, what the Lord told Isaiah. Maybe we'll read it from Isaiah, because this is what I believe is perhaps what we're seeing happen in America. Perhaps he was writing this to the children of Israel, but I think the same thing is true for the world we live in today. That's what's going to happen to the worldly wisdom. Isaiah 29, verse 13. Wherefore the Lord said, for as much as this people draw near me with their mouth. Now think about what he says here. For as much as this people draw near me with their mouth, and with their lips they do honor me, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precepts of men. Therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work among this people, even a marvelous work and a wonder, for the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hid. Worldly wisdom will simply go away with the world, to be gone. Someday it will be no more. So I wanted to look at, where does true wisdom come from? Where does true wisdom come from? And it's probably an elementary question. Where does true wisdom come from? Job asked this question. You can turn to Job chapter 28. He had a question. Where does wisdom come from? Job chapter 28, starting at verse 12. But where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? He's writing about wisdom here. Man knoweth not the price thereof, neither is it found in the land of the living. The depth saith, it is not in me, and the sea saith, it is not with me. It cannot be gotten of gold, neither can silver be weighed for the price thereof. It cannot be valued with the gold of Ophir, and the precious onyx, or the sapphire. The gold and the crystal cannot equal it, and the exchange of it shall not be for jewels of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The trophies of Ethiopia shall not equal it, neither shall it be valued with pure gold. Whence then cometh wisdom, and where is the place of understanding? Seeing it is hid from the eyes of all living and kept close from the fowls of the air, destruction and death say, we have heard the fame thereof with our ears. God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the ends thereof. For he looketh to the ends of the earth, and seeth under the whole heavens, to make the weight of the wind, and he weigheth the waters by measure. And he made a decree for the rain, and the way for lightning of the thunder. Then did he see it, and declared it. He prepared it, yea, and searched it out. And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. Where does wisdom come from? It comes from the Lord. It comes from God. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Think about the wisdom that comes from above. And cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no shadow, no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Don't care how much money you have. I don't care how much you pursue wisdom, except you fear the Lord. You will not get it. And it is interesting as you read through the Old Testament. I've just read through a portion of the Old Testament up through Exodus. I'm in the Kings now. But many times in the Old Testament before, and I don't know how much technology they have. It's always when I read, I try to picture myself in their day and age and what they had and didn't have. And, of course, God gave Moses, when he told him to build the tabernacle, he gave him specific instructions on how he's supposed to make the clothes for the priest. And you know, I picture my wife. She sits at the sewing machine, and she sews around this dress. And then sometimes she borrows these fashion machines that do the edges, whatever you call them. And I think about that. It's something that she learned from her mom, and the mom teaches next. And God told Moses, now build all these things. And I don't know if they spun yarn or they made things in Egypt or not. But not very long after that, you read that God tells Moses, now I have given men wisdom to do these things. He's wise-hearted men, and the wisdom. And it just says in Exodus 28, thou shalt speak unto all that are wise-hearted, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom. So God always, didn't matter which generation, I think in our generation too, that he is pouring down wisdom that we need for whatever we need inside the brotherhood. I don't think we have to reach outside and try to get wisdom from all kinds of other sources, because I believe that God gives what we need for brotherhood inside the brotherhood. He gives wisdom. And it's interesting how many times that God's wisdom, when you look down through it, like Moses went in there before the Pharaoh, and Aaron went in, and Pharaoh says, well, how do I know who's God, you know? And Aaron had that rod, and he threw the rod down and turned into a serpent. And so Pharaoh said to his wise men, well, turn down your rod. So we have these, I'm going to say worldly wise men, and he threw the rods down. They became serpents too. And they're like, see, you know, we got these serpents, and Aaron's rod just went around and ate them all up. See, that's what godly wisdom will always supersede earthly wisdom. And you can read about all the men. I mean, think about Joseph. You know, there he was, just this man that was this boy that his brothers didn't like, and threw him there in the dungeon, and threw him there in the pit, and then sold him. And one day he was called in he was helped somebody with the dreams, and before long he was called in. A couple years later, he was called into Pharaoh there, and he was supposed to explain a dream. And he said, I'm going to kill all the wise men. And Joseph says, well, let me explain. And it says about how that God had filled him with understanding and wisdom. See, it was God-filled. That's where we get it from. That's where it comes from. And the second thing it has was, how do we get this wisdom? And turn to Psalm. How do we get this wisdom that's from above? I already read that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I could have probably put that under this same point. But the wisdom that we get, how do we get it? It starts with fear in the Lord, and Psalm 111 says this. Psalm 111, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So if you want this wisdom that's over here, you need to, first of all, fear the Lord. And I thought about the fear of the Lord for a little while. You know, we use that term, fear the Lord, and what does that really mean to you? I mean, does that mean that that in the English language, when we think of fear, we think of things that we're really scared of. Some people are afraid of the dark. Some people are afraid of storms. But it says in Psalms, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And I thought about how that the fear of the Lord is really what affects these kind of actions. And I think that in when God came before the Israelites and he was there leading them, he did some things that was very terrifying to them. And they looked at God as a God of all, one that's honored, one that's reverence, one that's respect. And they had a fear of him. And I think they were really scared of him. Now, today, maybe you're scared of God. I would say I fear God because he is an awesome God. And he is in control of everything. And he's in control of my life. And I believe that he is. And I believe that the fear of the Lord is in today is, in a way, is simply to believe that God is. And to believe that he always was. And to believe that he created me for a purpose. And we need to believe that the life that we live affects others. It will affect someone. I don't care who you are here this morning. Your life is affecting someone, whether you're young or you're old. There's somebody that's watching you. There's somebody that's looking up to you, and your life is affecting you. It's affecting those people. Those who have children, they are following us. And the fear of God simply is understanding that someday all these people that we influence and all these, and including myself, are going to stand before an almighty God. And he's going to judge. And do we fear God and do we serve him with our life? And if we do, then these traits start to come out because we look around and say, God wants holiness. And because of the blood of Jesus, we can be saved. And as a result, these things become part of our life. And it changes our view of life. No longer do we think about what we like and what we want, but we begin to think about how it's going to affect the future for myself, how it's going to affect the future for the children, how it's going to affect the future of the Bible discovery decision, how it's going to affect the future of the course committee, the church, when we make decisions and have to need wisdom to know how to address things. It takes this side. Proverbs 8, verse 13 says this, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. If we despise evil, that is the fear of the Lord. There's the fear of the Lord will hate evil because God hates evil. And then the second thing we must do to get wisdom, and that is we need to ask for it. Turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 5 and 6. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. And let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like the wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. How do we get wisdom? It's simple. Ask for it. Ask for it. We face many things in life. We want a quick answer. Don't Google it. Don't search it. Ask for it. Ask God for it. He wants it. It's like he's standing there just waiting to hand it out. That's what James writes. He says, if any of you lack wisdom, ask God. That's easy, right? The easiest thing you have, the easiest command in the Bible. If you need it, ask for it. That's what James writes. And he'll give it to you. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. That's probably the hard part. Okay, so we have decisions to make, and we don't know what to do about it, and we want to make sure we ask it in the right way. We want to make sure that people understand where we're coming from, and they feel our burden for whatever the situation is or however. You want wisdom on how to do this. And so you ask God and you ask him, because James says if you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. So you ask God, and then you sit back and wonder what you should do. Is it because that, and I don't have the answer for that, but I do find that whenever I'm trying to figure something out, that if I ask God and feel like this is the answer, that I take that in faith and say that was God's answer. Because it says, let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. And that means when you ask God, you need to understand, you need to believe that the solution to it was your answer. And I know that we could get hung up and say, well, sometimes we make decisions and wish later we'd have made a different decision. But that's our humanity. We won't always make. I think you can ask God for wisdom in every situation, and there'll be times when you find out later that you wish you had made a little bit different decision. But don't quit asking because of that. We need to continue to ask simply because it says if you lack wisdom, ask. And there's many of us, most of us here, I think, maybe I should say all of us here lack wisdom to some extent. I think we all do. I think we always will. And if we want to have this kind of wisdom, we need to just ask God for it. And then believe what he tells us. I don't think that we'll all get the wisdom that Solomon got. I just read that in my devotions, and I was just, I mean, God appeared unto Solomon and said, what should I give thee? And Solomon said, thou hast showed great mercy on the day of my father and hast made me to reign in his stead. Now, Lord God, give me now wisdom and knowledge that I may go out and come in before this people. For who can judge this thy people that is so great? And God said unto Solomon, because this was in thine heart, and thou hast not asked riches, wealth, or honor, nor the life of thine enemies, neither yet hast thou asked long life, but hast asked wisdom and knowledge for thyself, thou mayest judge my people over whom I have made thee king. Wisdom and knowledge is granted unto thee, and I will give thee riches, wealth, honor, such as none of the kings have had that have been before thee, neither shall there any after thee have the like. And you can see continue to read throughout the reign of Solomon, and the wisdom that he had that came from God surpassed all the other wisdom about him. It's just, you can read again and again how people flooded in to hear his wisdom. And King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom, and all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom. From who? That God had put in his heart. He prayed and God gave it. And somehow I wish that when I pray for wisdom, I'll never be as wise as Solomon, because he said nobody ever would be, but you wish you could be halfway there. But we don't. God doesn't give everybody the same amount of wisdom, but he does in a group, in a church, in a body of believers, or among different faithful men, there is wisdom. So when you're asking for wisdom from God, perhaps God can give you wisdom through another regenerate individual. You see, that's different than just going out here and seeking it from somebody that's not born again. It still comes from God if it's coming from a born-again individual. In conclusion this morning, what wisdom are you pursuing? Do you fear God? Do you believe God is in everything? What is the end result of your decisions? And continue to ask God. Ask in faith, nothing wavering. And I pray that God would give you the wisdom of every situation that you beg him from. Let's kneel for prayer.